This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The fires of Los Angeles. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein of the Civitas Institute at the University of Texas, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, to comment on the fires of Los Angeles, lessons learned so far. Richard, a very good evening to you. The fundamentals are the two large fires, the Eaton Fire near around Mount Wilson and the Palisades Fire along the very expensive coastline, remain unsolved, but in going in the right direction. However, it is time to examine how we got here. If I understand the fundamentals, because there's been a lot of politics all week, the Palisades Fire is a result of the infrastructure not responding to need. The reservoir built in the Palisades some decades ago to answer a fire there along the coastline was empty, due repairs for the last year. That, more than anything else, did not provide the water the firemen needed in the first critical hours to stop the conflagration. The Santa Ana winds are an annual event. They can be up to 100 miles per hour. There is evidence that that was the clock time in 1969, so there's nothing fresh about this. At the same time, those who say global warming contributed have a point. The drier and hotter air that came in from the desert, where it forms and blows out to sea, is affected by global warming, so it cannot be ruled out. The future, say the scientists, are going to have fewer Santa Ana winds, but drier and hotter, meaning the conditions for the forest fires will remain intact. Remember, what burns is the underbrush that builds up because there are rains in other parts of the year. The very settled parts of Los Angeles are surrounded by hills filled with fuel for fires. When that fire jumps into the residential area, you get catastrophes. So, a very good evening to you. You have much to say about the fires and what is to be done. Good evening to you.
Yes. Look, the first thing I want to say is I do disagree with you on something, which is the constant claim that global warming is it. Because if you then look at the count for global warming, the way the articles are written, almost without exception, is they say this is the problem of the future. Then you look for references to carbon dioxide, and the articles contain none of them. So I've been actually writing a paper on this recently, and I think I've probably looked at 20 such articles in the last day or two, and they all have exactly the same pattern. What is driving all of this is a whole variety of forces. And there is El Nino and there's La Nina, which have exactly opposite situations. The general way with all things in nature is that they're cyclical. The proof of this is surprisingly simple. If these things were monotonic, meaning once they start off in one direction, they keep on going in that direction and never stop, what's going to happen is, in the end, the Earth will come to an end. And so the dominant form of thinking about this is cyclical. And so what you have to do is know what they did in ancient Egypt with Joseph, is that during the abundant years, you store up food, and in the lean years, you take it down. So if you're trying to figure about temperature, you mentioned that the two previous years were very wet years in California. The reservoirs filled up some, although a lot of the water was went uselessly out to sea in the north. And then what happens is you get a dry year. At that point, the earlier wet years become something of a curse, because now you have an abundant amount of undergrowth that has grown in the wet years. It's gotten dry. It's become tinder. And the moment that tinder comes, the thing that you must do is you must remove it. Tom McClintock, many years ago, had a very telling editorial in which he did is he said, well, you just take a camera and go over Northern California. Remember, all this happened there in 2018 when temperatures were actually going down globally. And what he said is you can tell government land from private land, because all the dead wishes are there. You just see it from the sky. And so the observation that he meant is Georgia Pacific, which is a very well-run coke company, has huge amounts of land. There's never been a fire that has started on their land, because what they do is they groom it to the point where it's important. When you get these environmentalists, many of them sort of believe that there's a kind of a myth that nature has to take its course. And what it does is it destroys everything else. And so they did not do anything right. The reservoir was but one thing. They diverted all the water into the sea instead of sending much of it south where it would have been useful. They did nothing to clean up the operation. The mayor of the city is a DEI hire, and she basically said, DEI is my first priority. I would have thought the first priority was putting out fires and making sure the area was safe, but it's not that. Then, of course, when you have these crews and it goes longer than it would, the complications become extremely serious. Every time you're trying to fight these fires, and the longer you have to fight them, the more toxic chemicals that you have to put on the ground, the more difficult it is to get rid of all the stuff. And now what you do is you have a governor who's trying to compound the felony by saying, I'm putting in various kinds of devices to make sure that there's no gouging or predatory pricing or fraud. And he says, you're not allowed to make an unsolicited offer for an empty plot of land. Well, I mean, it's a silly kind of prohibition. Many people are desperate to sell. It's also an ineffective prohibition. There are many people who are desperate to get out. They don't have the funds to rebuild. And there are other people who are willing to buy because they do. And those transactions are perfectly sensible. And so it should not matter who initiates them. But what will happen is the people who want to sell will put up a sign, hire a broker saying for sale. And then you really have to say to the governor, do you really want to stop them from selling their houses because these are all fraudulent transactions? I don't think you want to do that. You then have the problem of schooling. You have the problem of infrastructure, reconstruction, and so forth. And what happens is you have a series of lame brains, both in Washington, not in Washington, in California and Sacramento and down south. So nobody has any confidence in anything that's going on. I mean, I would put it sufficiently strongly that if you start to look at the kind of response from people who've been burnt out by this thing, the ferocity of their attacks against the establishment, both in the city and the state, is really quite extraordinary. The way I like to put it, I think it's only a little bit of an exaggeration. If the presidential election were run tomorrow in California, and you had a choice between the Democrats, who are behind all this stuff, and the Republicans, there's a very good chance that Trump might even win the state, but he'd certainly get multiple percentage points. And remember, there were, I think, 10 counties in California that voted Republican this time that had been for Biden before. So this could actually be a precipitate of a major political recognition that the current policies are completely failed and a complete turnover in the way in which the government is going to operate. The more you look at the details, every single decision that was made by either the state or by the city was in favor of doing nothing in the short term. And once you do that, it's all over. So removing the brush would have been every bit as important. If you remember, Hawaii is a similar state politically. And when they had their Maui fires, everybody was talking about global warming. And then when you look closely, it was gross mismanagement of areas which were known to be impacted by dry stuff. And nobody did anything about it in advance. So to put this in perspective, John, the real problem started on January 6th, I guess it was. The first fire, January 7th, it's been going now for, you know, close to 2 weeks. But the structural flaws were put into place years before this. They were evident in 2018. They were evident everywhere else. So long as we have there a governor who wants to put everything to global warming, what he's able to do is to essentially divert responsibility from his utter incompetence to put it on some natural force. And then what you start to do is to ask yourself the question, how much does gasoline have to do or burning fuel in Southern California with anything that happened in this case? It's an issue of trying to look toward a remote cause to explain something for which a proximate cause is perfectly evident. There are a lot of calls now for Bass, who's utterly incompetent, and for Gavin Newsom, who's a bit slicker, but also intellectually empty, for both of them to resign. I hope they do resign. God knows what we'll get in that state. I would hope there'd be an election in the city, because I do think if it happened, the Democrats would lose everything. I don't know what would happen at the state level with Mr. Newsom. But this thing is the tragedy. It's a human tragedy. It is born by progressive policies, which are in complete ignorance of everything that's going on. And what happens is you read places like the New York Times this morning, and they get some firefighter says, we really have to stop burning fossil fuels, as if that's going to solve this particular problem.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Civitas Institute, University of Texas, speaking on the fires. We need to turn to, not a fire, but certainly a hot topic. That's pardons. The power of the president to pardon in these last days of the Biden administration.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.